Are you a fan of the small ball?
I'm not as dramatic now as James.
Dramatic? You sound like my wife now.
Jealous of all the inside analysis and crack on the football pod? Well, we've got you covered with the Hurling Pod. Subscribe to the Hurling Pod feed on the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM. With Gillette. Get into your flow with the new Gillette Labs Razor with exfoliating bar.
Let's turn our attention to the weekend's football. I'm delighted to say David Myler is back with us. David, good morning to you. How you getting on?
Morning, gents.
Let's start with Manchester United, okay? Because that's what everybody's talking about at the moment. Is this as bad as it can get, or actually, is there still room for this to be much worse? What's your take?
It's very bad, but it can get worse. I think yes, this second half performance was one of the worst performances, certainly from this group of players I've seen in a long time. For 45 minutes, they kind of huffed and puffed, and they tried to high press them. They went after them. You know, they looked at the odd occasion that they could counter attack, but then the back four were all over the place. Lindelof, Maguire, mistakes, Wan-Bissaka, like everything came down the left side. They got cleaned out. Kind of get worse. Of course, it can get worse because, you know, they could end up getting beaten by, you know, the teams down the bottom end of the table where they're getting comfortable. They're getting beat at Old Trafford and that. But it's where do United go from here? Like, what is the solution? You know, you look at the appoint Ragnick, who's obviously going up into the board after his, you know, tenure as manager. He even mentioned he could have recommended himself. Like, there's no chance of him becoming manager. It just seems that the players don't seem to respect him. His philosophy, his ideas, it's not working. The whole story with Ronaldo before the game, who knows what's true, what's not true. It just seems, it's just a complete and utter mess.
You're a Liverpool fan. You know it can get much worse. You know it could be like this for another 10 years. The whole notion that there's a quick fix solution or a manager on the shelf who's going to come in and fix this immediately, that's not true. It's a long, long way back for Manchester United from here to even competing for a title, let alone winning it.
What do United know? Is it 9 or 10 years since they've last won a league title? We had a debate the other day. Basically, do I think United would go as long as Liverpool waiting for another Premier League title? And certainly the signs would point in that direction. Like, their transfer policy over the last few years hasn't been great. Like, we're all well aware of how much money they've spent to, you know, try and compete with Liverpool and Manchester City, but it's just time after time they're signing the wrong players. And I think, like, they do need to hit the reset button. There has to be a long-term project, and going into the summer, they have to get their managerial appointment right. And if they don't, it's just going to be another year of it for United fans where it's just going to be, you know, dreadful football. Players like that, the most damning thing you could say, and it's as a former player, like, they gave up yesterday. There was no fight, there was no character, there was no heart. You think it is a Manchester derby. Like, yeah. Okay, you can have poor games where it's not going well, but you roll your sleeves up and you work hard and you close people down. That is basic enough stuff. Like, look, we've all misplaced passes, we've all, you know, missed chances, been caught out of position, but you work hard. And yesterday, you know, the third and fourth goals, just a complete and utter lack of effort from them.
That's pretty damning. Like, that's not just on Ranić, that's on the players themselves as well.
Yeah, and I do feel a bit for Ragnick. Because he's come into a football club that has incredible history. It's an incredible club. There's no getting away from that. You know, the success that, you know, certainly Sir Alex brought them. You know, they are one of the biggest clubs in the world. He's gone into a complete and utter mess, and he's trying to do what, you know, his philosophy of this high press to kind of match you're inevitably Jurgen Klopp, that he plays more that way, but the players just haven't reacted. I don't even know where to start, because there just seems to be so many different problems. Like, at one point was Cristiano the problem? You've seen after yesterday Cristiano didn't play, but they were still awful. So you can't point to, like, is he a problem? Probably, yeah, he's one of them. There's about 100 other things that are wrong as well.
It's a situation now where it's kind of ripping it up and starting again in a way that
even a good managerial appointment won't do much to help. As in, obviously, you want the manager to try and get the best out of whatever bunch of players does start next season. But it goes way deeper than that. It is a restructuring of an entire squad that is just going to need to be put on ice for a while in terms of its ambition to win a title. But it seems that a lot of Manchester United fans just can't accept that they do need to be challenging for a title next season, and almost to the point where that's being replicated within the club, because that's the only way you can explain some of their transfer business over the last little while, the sort of constant plastering over some of the cracks.
No, it's definitely they are papering over the cracks. And that's probably, it's probably been one of the downfalls of a club like Manchester United, where they've been so successful that they feel every year they have to be challenging. They just, look, we all know Manchester United growing up watching the Premier League. Man United have always been there knocking on the door to either win it, or they're never too far out of the top four. And that's kind of where they're at, that they just keep throwing money at this problem. And, you know, anyone who watches Manchester United knew they were, you know, crying out for a holding midfielder to kind of really establish their attack and kind of like make them more solid. But then they don't do it. Of course, look, you looked at the three players they brought in with Sancho, who's actually hit some form under Ragnick. They brought in Rafa Varane and, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo. You think they could be three of the four missing pieces that they do need, that they thought, you know what, we can hold out with McTominay and Fred, but like they're not good enough for Manchester United. You look at the great Manchester United teams that have won Premier League titles, going all the way from the start to the last time, you know, they won it. How many of the players in Man United's current 11 would even get on the bench of those teams? Like, of course, look, you're also talking about a 37-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, in his pomp, like this, he gets into every team, but the rest of them, they're not at Manchester United's quality. Okay, you could make a case for Bruno, De Gea maybe, but Bruno, even yesterday, just, I don't know what's gone wrong with him. He just looks fed up. For someone who usually is so good at like running games, being involved with assists, goals or whatever, I've never seen him misplace so many passes. It's a tough time for Manchester United fans.
Can I ask you a question, right? So if Pochettino comes in and is given a long-term deal, say a 3 or 4 year deal, right? Do the current players play better? Are they just not good enough? Like, is it black and white, right? Where they've all had their opportunity. They've all played tens, if not hundreds of games for Manchester United over the last 5 or 6 seasons. We've seen this group of players and what they're capable of under those managers. Is it possible that a new manager could come in and turn any of those four fullbacks back into title contending fullbacks? Like, can Pochettino galvanise the team by sheer force of personality and quality of coaching and tactical acumen to go, all of a sudden, Wan-Bissaka, yeah, I can have you play 36, 38 games and you're going to be totally fine as a right back, when Reece James and Trent Alexander-Arnold and whoever else are the ones playing in that position for the teams who are on the verge of winning titles?
I definitely think a Pochettino-type character can come in. Yes, you can implement your style and players can buy into it and they can improve. United at the moment, you look at their back four, like, the best example is Luke Shaw and Harry Maguire. Both had fantastic Euros. I don't know what's after happening to Luke Shaw. Harry, like, I was on here the other day and I'm defending him. Harry just is all over the place. He looks shot. Lindelof, like yesterday, like you can cut up the goals whatever way you want, but I looked at Lindelof yesterday when you know, City are attacking on the left-hand side, like Wan-Bissaka's getting caught over, and then Lindelof goes charging out and leaves, you know, the centre to free, and then Harry's caught no man's land, so he should took a cross. Tellez should took a cross, but then the only one that seems to be alert in the box is Kevin De Bruyne. And, you know, so if you do bring in a new manager, of course they can come in and they can work with these players and they can make them better. But you're going back a lot of it to very, very basic defending that you should learn at a young age, where you talk about, you know, the discipline, the distances between the back four, you know, protecting your areas, like fullbacks. Even the fullbacks you mentioned there in Reece James and Trent Alexander-Arnold, like, they do a lot more defensively. Of course, they're both fantastic going forward. You know, the weakness that Trent has probably is his defending one-on-one, but that has improved significantly. But United's fullbacks aren't defending. They're not stopping crosses. They're getting beaten by their man. It's a lot of it is very basic stuff. And maybe it is a bit of comfort, you know, being a bit comfortable. They're not getting pushed hard enough. Of course, when you sign an interim manager, in the back of their minds, they think, well, he's only here for 6 months. My contract is longer. I'm fine. But like as Gary Neville said yesterday, he's obviously, whoever he recommends to the board to come in and be the next manager, that manager is going to come in and Ragnick's going to give them a profile of each player and what he thinks is right, what he thinks is wrong. And it's, you know, at the moment, their performances are totally unacceptable for a club like Manchester United.
It would be funny if Ranić recommended himself now after all this for a job.
He can't.
Fabrizio Romano's been tweeting this morning about Marcus Rashford. He says he's got sources at Manchester United that tell him that he's concerned about his game time and he is considering his future. Now, Rashford's contract expires in the summer of 2023. So Manchester United have a decision to make on Marcus Rashford this summer. Form would suggest that Manchester United don't care and may actually just let him walk. But realistically, if they're a well-run business, they need to cash in on him this summer. So what would you do, David, if you were in charge with Marcus Rashford at this point?
Well, you said there, right, obviously, Fabrizio Romano's tweeting about his sources and whatever he's heard. I could tell you for a fact that Marcus Rashford, like, I've met Marcus, but Marcus, you look at yesterday, they started with Paul Pogba and Bruno as kind of their, you know, leading the line. Like Marcus Rashford is obviously majority of his time he plays off the left wing, but he has played up front. Anyone who watches any bit of football know that he has got to be annoyed. He's got to be pissed off, really, that he's not starting that. You know, you look at the, of course, Martial's gone alone. We know the Greenwood situation. Ronaldo and Cavani are out. Like, they're kind of like, they were United's four strikers. And then obviously with those four out, like you'd expect Rashford to play through the middle. He's got to be fed up. I don't think the question is about Manchester United. I think the question is to Marcus Rashford, what do you really want? Do you want to, you know, continue your career at Manchester United? Are you going to go and perform in training, get, you know, an opportunity in a game and play well? Because we've seen over time and time again, he has come up at significant moments with good goals, important goals. But it seems to me he's almost lost a bit of his hunger. He seems a bit fed up. And I think he needs to do a bit of soul searching and think, well, what do I want? Because he is a very good player. But am I going to, does he see his future at Manchester United or does he see it elsewhere? And if he does, then, you know, once the summer comes, he'll have to weigh that up. And I think he will have to, you know, have a good deep think about what he wants to do.
What would you recommend if you were in his camp, if you were an agent or a friend of his? Would it be, look, you've had your time at Man United, go off and play for Newcastle or Arsenal or whoever is interested and try and become a superstar there again? Or is it actually, you are Manchester United DNA and so you've had been blown off course here, but get back to it, get back to what you could be and do it here?
If I was advising him, I would certainly say, like, you'd have to sit down and strip it all back and say, well, what's gone wrong? I definitely think, as you said there, he's come through the United Academy. He has that DNA. He should know how the club is. As a young boy, he would have seen, you know, the club lifting Premier League titles. He's played a lot of games for Manchester United. He should know what's expected of a Manchester United player, the expectation of the fans. I definitely think he needs to knuckle down. And I think, like, if I were him, I would see myself at Manchester United. Why would he want to go anywhere else? Of course, I get it. Somebody would say game time. I imagine he's getting paid a fortune there, so it wouldn't really be money if you talk about, say, like Newcastle. I would see myself as playing with Manchester United for the rest of my career if I were him. That's where you want to be. You want to be at a club like that, certainly when, you know, you've grown up supporting the club. But it's very easy for me to say it here. It's got to come from him. You know, it's crazy. We could go through 15, 16 of those players and ask the same question. Like, you've got Pogba, Lingard out of contract, who are probably both going to move on. Like, they both played yesterday. It's crazy, really, what's going on at that club.
It is crazy, and it's crazy how badly they've been run, considering allowing those players, which were assets, that they didn't cash in on them. You know, we need to keep Lingard around, we need to keep giving him deals and paying him more and more and more, to the point where we never actually really use him, except then in absolute crisis. In the big games, we turn to him and we go, okay, come on. It's like, well, you didn't pick me against
And Jesse's probably a prime example of what you're talking about there with Rashford with the Manchester United DNA. He went to West Ham on loan. It was unbelievable. Had an incredible time. He then thought, you know, I'm doing it in the Premier League here. I can come back under Solskjaer and maybe I'll get opportunities. And he did get opportunities, but it's not worked out. Like he should have left in January. There was enough clubs sniffing around him. You know, West Ham wanted him back. David Moyes obviously speaks so highly of him. Newcastle were interested. That's your opportunity to go and play, you know, the last 15, 16 games of the Premier League season and then, you know, try and kick on and then he can re-establish himself in the England squad or whatever. But kind of there is that attachment too, which is like when I mentioned that because I talk about Rashford, that you don't want to get caught then in no man's land where you're kind of going nowhere. And
it's a fair point. Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe, know, there is.
Maybe the right thing, certainly in Lingard's case, the right thing was just get out. Just get out and go and do and be yourself. And like maybe it's too oppressive. And that's the other side of this is like you keep getting told that, oh, there's never been a matchday squad without a United youth player. It's like, well, so am I just here because they don't want to break that streak or am I here because they actually want me in the squad? And maybe somebody else can take that pressure. Let's talk about the teams who are playing well at the moment. Talk about City in a minute. What did you make of Liverpool's performance? Because again, we were talking on Friday and I felt like they were going to probably dominate that game and win handily, but it wasn't as easy. It wasn't that easy at all for them.
No, but look, we just obviously Liverpool are on this magnificent run, you know, with the 12 wins and you kind of expect them to go in, you expect them to win, you expect them to dominate, certainly playing at Anfield. West Ham are a very, you know, very well organised team who are in, you know, they're battling for top four. Whether or not they'll get it, I don't know. But they're certainly up there. And, you know, David Moyes has them well organised. You know, they're very difficult to beat. And look, they created a lot of chances against Liverpool. You know, Trent having to clear one off the line. Alisson having to come up trumps. On another day, or a better team, like your Man City, they take those opportunities. Seeing that yesterday, even, I know we'll talk about it, but United and City are so ruthless that, you know, West Ham probably lacked that where... There was obviously massive talk in the transfer window of them signing a striker to kind of compete with Antonio who can get them the 15 to 20 goals. But at the same time, Liverpool just needed to get the job done. Of course, you would like to play better, but I think at this significant part of the season, it's about 3 points at closing, you know, trying to close that gap on Manchester City and keep them under pressure. But, you know what I mean, they got the job done and that's all that matters.
On the point of Trent Alexander-Arnold, Jurgen Klopp was coming out afterwards saying that he wouldn't be in the team if he couldn't defend it. I know you've touched on it there a moment ago about his ability to defend, and you said that his one-on-one defending has got better over the last little while. So what are you seeing from Trent on that front? I guess what we're talking about in the aftermath of Saturday was a goal line clearance and a great assist, but I guess it's away from that I want to focus on here, his actual one-on-one marking.
Yeah, well, it's more in the probably in the transition zone. It's when Liverpool are, you know, we've seen it time and time again when Liverpool play this high line. That when, like with West Ham, for example, when they break, Trent in the past, you know, I think if he was open minded and he looked back at his own performances, his games when he's so good going forward that he doesn't necessarily always sprint back or get back as quick as he could. And I think that has developed with him because, you know, there was a lot of games where a lot of chances came down his side because, of course, on the other side, you've got Virgil, which is obviously a colossal defender, so people tend to try and avoid him. But he's just... it's more of his defensive work rate. He's getting back quicker. He's getting himself into better positions where, you know, in the past, he was kind of getting there, you know, 5, 6, 7 seconds too late that, you know, he's already out of position, but now he's getting back quicker. So then he's solid... they're able to then deal with the situation. You've seen that with the goal line clearance. In the past, Trent would have never probably been in that kind of situation. But that's obviously something that he's worked on. Like, there's no doubting his ability going forward. He's the best attacking fullback in the world. You've seen that with his goals and his assists. But certainly he has massively improved going back.
What about when it comes to the Liverpool's line? I mean, this is not a comment on it ever changing or not being the right decision, but there was obviously a couple of the opportunities for West Ham on Saturday night, including the one that Trent Alexander-Arnold cleared off the line. Do you think that there's a situation coming where they are going to start leaking more goals at the moment, or was Saturday probably as bad as it's going to look in those sort of isolated moments?
Well, you only have to remember back to the Aston Villa game where Liverpool got hammered. There will come the odd game where they do get you know, sucker punched and they do get caught and a team is on it, or a forward or wingers are on it, and they're going to, you know, every opportunity they get, they're going to score. That will happen. But at the same time, you know, with the, we have always had the Liverpool front three, but it's now like the front five. Obviously, if you add Jota, Diaz into that mix of the previous front three, like, there's so much goals there. There's so many opportunities being created. You know, like the other day, okay, Salah didn't have his finest game, but then Mane played through the middle. Thought he did really well. All he was missing was, you know, a bit more, like in terms of goals or whatever. Like, Diaz looks like an incredible, you know, signing, slotted straight in. So I think if Liverpool do play that high line and they do concede goals, I still think they have so much firepower that they'll score more than the opposition. And it only takes, I don't think we'll have a repeat of the Villa game, but I do think it would be the odd goal that will be lost. You look at Fornals, should have scored the other day. It will happen occasionally, but I think Liverpool at the moment are just smelling themselves. They feel too good, and, you know, going forward, they'll just score more goals than the opposition.
Quick word about City, right? From a Liverpool perspective, actually the Manchester derby rolling around to energise City and make them very interested again and take their mind off the chasing pack, probably not great from Liverpool. They would have been happy enough for City to be drifting along, coasting. But the energy and injection of meaning yesterday suddenly means that City are back again. So...
I don't think City had kind of gone anywhere. Obviously, you know, the Spurs performance was disappointing. But Liverpool are going to have a blimp in a game like City. It's just, Man City are like machines. They're like robots. Like, you know, Pep's blessed with 22 players that he could start any one of them. And they still put in a level of performance. You know, City, the question we had on Friday when we were talking about, when you couldn't call the game because you didn't know if United would sit in and try and catch them on the counter-attack with their speed and their pace, you know, but City just turned up and roll. Like, City were only in third gear, like, Sunday. That's the scary thing. And, you know, City could have gone up a few more levels if they really, really wanted to. But that's look, they've been there, thereabouts the last few seasons, competing on all fronts for every, you know, every football trophy they can win. You know, they're not going to make it easy for Liverpool. If Liverpool are going to win the Premier League title, you're going to have to do it the hard way, and they're going to have to, you know, if Man City get beaten by Liverpool, then they'll accept it, because City are just going to keep going and they're going to keep winning games. They're a fantastic side.
It's interesting because, like, I've heard people say that all right in the aftermath of yesterday, that City did have a couple of other gears to go to. Like, is that a deliberate decision for Manchester City, or I guess it's probably a reaction to the scoreboard late in the game, where you do see things like this Hazard kick from Cancelo? They are kind of like taking the piss a little bit with Manchester United. There's no getting away from it. But is it actually more of a subconscious thing that seeps in, David, that you actually can't do anything about it, that there is that, not a complacency, but there's this sense of just dropping down those gears a little bit more than someone like Pep would actually want? He would have wanted them to maybe put the foot on the throat a little bit more, I suspect, yesterday.
I wouldn't say the players are conscious of it while they're playing. For me, it's more about the way, you know, the opposition are playing against you. If you look at the second half, yes, as opposed to the first half, United were high pressing and City had to move the ball quicker. So that means players are, you know, obviously more alert, they're sharper. As the second half progressed, you know, United, look, it's been highlighted by every pundit around, you know, the lack of effort, not tracking runners. That's what I kind of mean by City didn't really put them to the sword. Like, I know they came out 4-1 winners, but the players were just kind of keeping the ball. They're jogging around. Like, if United were pressing them hard, then City will have to work harder to move the ball, create angles, create opportunities or whatever. But there was none of that in the second half, so you automatically just kind of, you don't put in as much effort, because it becomes like a big possession-based game where you just keep the ball and you just move players around. And United players yesterday, like, they weren't even, one, they weren't playing as a team, but two, they weren't even playing as individuals. The kind of, like, there was nobody really charging around, kind of going, I've had enough of this, they're taking a piss out of us. So City is just quite happy to keep the ball and knock it around and say, do you know what, got another game in a few days' time, we'll just keep the ball and we'll keep you running around. And, you know, if something pops up in around the box, one of us will take a shot, or you know, it's just the way the kind of game unfolded for City, that they're saying, well, we're not going to stress ourselves here. I've got a game in a couple of days' time and I don't want to get injured.
Last question for you is, are Arsenal now your favourites to make it? Not just the point situation, but also their ability to win games that in the past, you know, Watford would have won that game five times out of eight over the last five seasons.
Or they would have certainly got a draw out of it. I don't know, it's just weird because Arsenal are kind of like tipping along nicely and nobody's really talking about them now. Obviously they've jumped into that fourth spot, they're a point clear of United, they've got three games in hand. You think if they are to get 7 points out of that, then can United bridge that gap? It could be very, very difficult. So you'd have to look at Arsenal are the team in the driving seat. Just Arteta at the moment, I think the best bit of business he's done is get rid of Aubameyang. Not saying that he's not a very good footballer, but there was obviously something going wrong with Aubameyang in the background off the pitch. And you look at the front three of Saka, Martinelli and Odegaard, Alexander Lacazette as the striker. They just seem to feed off him. It seems to be like kind of the father figure, and he's got these three young fellas flying, and whatever way Arteta's done it, you know, they just look good and, you know, they're getting results. Of course, they had a little bit of a shaky last 10 minutes in the game yesterday. But as you said there, in the past, they probably would have ended up conceding a goal, drawing the game or lost the game. But they're just finding ways to win and they just keep going. And at the moment, you'd fancy them to go and, you know, obviously finish in the top four.
All right, we'll let you go, Dave. Good stuff. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
It's David Moyle giving us his weekend thoughts there. Reminder, OTBA, I'm brought to you live each morning by Gillette Labs for an effortless finish to your day. Bit of thunder there in the background, was it?
Yeah, I'm so hungry.
Are you distracted? Like, oh, everything, you're like, we're all floating hams to you, are we?
Yeah, no, usually the hunger stays off until about like 10 a.m, but not this morning for whatever reason.
Obviously
working up an appetite here, getting stuck into the, well, what do you call it, the top of the show, the weekend's action again?
Bewildering,
yeah. That's exactly it. Consider me bewildered.
The best player on the Manchester City pitch for 90 minutes yesterday was Bernardo Silva, says RB. Peter G says, the post-Ferguson era at Manchester United has to be the biggest failure in Premier League history in terms of rebuilding squads, reshaping a club's playing style, and just waste of money. It is definitely up there with Liverpool after the first Kenny Dalglish period. How didn't Harry Maguire win man of the match? He assisted with all four goals, says Gerard Fitzpatrick. If the wages for footballers weren't so obscenely high, then clearing out Deadwood would be much easier, says Damien. It's kind of, you know, if me granny had balls. The scouting system is a shambles at Manchester United. Also, 90% of the wages should be win bonus only, says MOC. But then they won't sign for you. That's the point. It's like mediocre players will be able to be signed by other teams for money. The weekly Man United post-mortem never tire of hearing their woes. Oh, where are those United fans these days? There used to be loads of them. You'll never walk alone, says Paul McGee. And Bonnie says, Diaz signing for Liverpool shows what United are not doing. Good player for a good price with room to get even better. The thing is, if he signed for Man United, would he look any good?
Yeah, that's the key point.
In the current squad, like, where would he play? Who would he be taking the place of? Who'd be defending him? Who'd be passing the ball?
He'd be playing as probably a number nine. Jurgen Klopp is obviously, I mean, nothing more needs to be said about what he's done at Liverpool, but in the midst of all their fantastic recruitment, the end product of it is a manager who always does the right thing with them and has an incredible culture in that dressing room. So that is a huge part of it as well. No doubt that the recruitment is excellent.
Remember all the money they were getting for the Jordan Ives of the world as well?
Yeah.
That's exactly the stuff that United haven't done to allow them to make this be seamless. The 1.1 billion racks up because they don't get any money back for anything ever. They never sell when... Like,
well, the Rashford thing's going to be really interesting
it is.
Now.
What would you do?
I would sell.
I think I would as well.
I would sell, like, if you're making a business decision.
How much are you going to get for him?
Oh, God. That's 25 million? 20?
Oh, no. I'm thinking 40.
You're thinking 40. I suppose he's English. There's a bit of a tax on that. 1 year left in the deal, though.
Yeah, but like he's available. So, Everton, Newcastle, Palace, they all have money to buy someone at that level. Like,
what are you doing though? If you're one of those clubs, are you investing in someone like Marcus Rashford, or would you be pinning your hopes on, if you're Crystal Palace, finding the next Eze, for example?
Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned Palace, but you know, there's a load of teams at that level who would splash 40 million. Villa might spend that money.
Oh, here's the thing: I don't disagree that they would. but I'm asking if they should. Like, I mean, like Everton did show that they, you know, they went out and signed Dele Alli, like not so long ago.
Alex Iwobi.
So
price.
Like there's
more actually, I think.
There's definitely potential for one of those clubs to sign Marcus Rashford. Like, it is. There's obviously a gem of a player there that will hopefully come good at some point in his career soon. But
maybe he goes abroad, you know, maybe he signs for Paris Saint-Germain for 30 million. And, like, that's all a possibility, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like,
Would he be happy to be a sub at Paris Saint-Germain for a season? Their players will move on.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that there's a period now where surely PSG wouldn't.
You're saying there's no market for him, or the market for him is going to be depressed.
Yes, definitely, and it's a lower rung of club that is going to come in from our, like, Manchester United are looking like they're going to finish fifth or sixth. They had a load of attacking players out, and Marcus Rashford can't start. Like, it's not like we're talking about a player who can't get into the Liverpool team here, and PSG might be interested in that. So why would PSG be interested in Marcus Rashford? Like, why would any club with that?
Well, because, you know, that's how this works. Yeah, that's how this carousel of nonsense works. It's like, oh, we'll take him and see. He might be, because there's definitely the bones of a really good player there. It's just whether or not some manager has the ego to think that they can fix him.
Yeah, I agree, but I think that it's about dropping down a level and for him to find that himself.
Okay, give me where do you think he most likely ends up and how much?
Well, you see, this is the thing, you mentioned Everton there, and Everton just feels like an absolute fit for £25 million. But I don't think that Everton should do that for what it's worth. But it's hard to argue against the fact that that's probably what's going to happen.
Conor Costlow says, Owen.
Oh. This never goes well.
Eddie Howe will someday be in the green. No. What a turnaround he's made to that whole football club.
Yeah, he has done a very good job, hasn't he? Like, to the point that it's not even a conversation anymore about are Newcastle United going to go down, and the club we've just been talking about has completely replaced them in that regard. Tonight's a huge fixture, Everton against Tottenham, in the context of the relegation battle and in the top four battle. Newcastle up to 14th now at this point, and they've got games in hand on Brighton, a game in hand on Brighton, so they could end up finishing 13th or even 12th before the end of the season. So, like, he's done an excellent job. There's obviously a very big reason why that is. He's had a blank check for a lot of signings during January, but sometimes those signings blow up in your face.
Yeah.
So he actually has had to get it together pretty quickly.
And it's not QPR under Harry Redknapp.
No, this is also the most high pressure, I guess, sequence of the Saudi era at Newcastle United, these first few months where, you can sign players, but there's no guarantee that they would gel and keep you in the division. And then there would have come the complication of getting relegated. So he's managed to ride out that period of very high stakes, high pressure, and a really good win for them at the weekend again on Saturday. So I think that actually, when we're judging, say, who would sign Marcus Rashford next year, and look, people may disagree with me on that, people may think that Rashford would be a good piece of business, but I would say that a club like Everton are more likely to err in that department than Newcastle will be. Like, I would not be surprised next year if we're kind of like talking about Newcastle as a bigger club than Everton, and maybe it's already the case if you're looking at the league position.
Oh, and their ability to sign players, they will be signing Champions League players to play in the Premier League on the hope of playing in the Champions League the following season, because that's how much money they have. All right, 17 minutes past 9, OTBAM brought to you live each morning by Gillette Labs for an effortless finish to your day. You were at Pride Park.
I was.
Watching the revolution and the greatest story in English football unfold before your eyes. They're closing the gap on Reading.
They are, and I think...
For anybody who's unfamiliar with this, Derby have been docked gazillion points and should be already relegated. They would be well within their rights to have... folded up their tents in the style of Manchester United, and the season would be over and they'd be on the beach. But instead, Wayne Rooney is getting them to, I don't know, is it play good football? But certainly they're winning games.
Oh,
they won again. You were there cheering them on.
Playing really, really nice football.
Lustily,
yeah. Scouting report, because half the team is Irish, isn't it? There will be, I think, in 15th position right now if they hadn't got that 21 point deduction. Reading, of course, had a points deduction themselves, a much less significant one. So Reading are currently 5 points clear of them, but they also have a game in hand. So it's very much stacked against Derby at the moment. I think they lost 3 games on the bounce before the weekend win against Barnsley. Barnsley were absolutely atrocious, and they're getting relegated for sure. Derby were not atrocious, and in fact, they actually looked really good. Jason Knight didn't start, came off the bench. They love him. The fans absolutely love him. I think that maybe he was just a little bit exhausted after the last little while. I don't think it was a tactical decision.
Still a kid.
You obviously had Festi Ebiseli, who is one of the standard Irish players in the division this season. Hadn't quite realised that he's actually a left back, or at least that's where Rooney played him.
But he's not, though.
On Saturday. Yeah, he's a winger because he played in the second half as a right winger. And unfortunately, in both of those halves, he was on the opposite side of the pitch to me, so I didn't get any, you know, close up scouting reports of Festi, unfortunately. But you know, I was in the same ground as him, and he looked good. He's really good in these tight positions, always making the right decision, even against a packed enough defence, getting out of trouble. Didn't really see the blistering pace too much because Barnsley had such a deep line. But yeah, he looks really comfortable on the ball. And then obviously we were talking about this guy last week, but Aaron Cashin, their new centre-back, who's played for, not new, but he's come through as a centre-back for Derby. He's played underage football for the Republic of Ireland. He looks really good. It's like he's conspicuously small for a centre-back, maybe just because he's standing beside Curtis Davis, but really composed on the ball. Did make one error, which almost led to a Barnsley goal, but other than that, he was not perfect. And he looks like a real player, and they really like him. The fans really like him, and they're in love with the three Irish people, but not on the same level as they're in love with Wayne Rooney right now. I think they would etch him a statue right now if they had to.
If they get relegated, is there a chance Rooney sticks around, like, and brings them up? Because they will come up straight away if he sticks around, and I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what happens financially, because I think there's a fear that if they go down that there will be further financial complication. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's there's a genuine existential threat.
And Mike Ashley is standing on the sideline going, oh, let me in, yeah. Put me in. I'm like, oh, that would take away all the sense of, oh, we love you, this is a great underdog story.
It certainly would, but yeah, no, it's good stadium, really, really, and like great atmosphere there, and like, I mean, the Irish tint to that has been definitely one of the more interesting elements of this year's championship. If they get out of it from this position, it will be an even bigger miracle now than it was a few weeks ago. They've got to play Bournemouth and Blackburn, I think, in the next week, and both of those are obviously chasing automatic promotion.
OTB AM with Gillette. Get into your flow with the new Gillette Labs Razor with exfoliating bar.